open to anybody. Why was he commanded by the Lord to be strong and courageous?
It was time to take possession of the land.
Yes. And let's see, Joshua was also told to obey the book of the law written by Moses. And do you remember why he was commanded to do that? So that the Israelites would be successful in their taking of the land. And anything else from chapter 1? Okay, moving on to chapter 2. We have a theme for chapter 2. Anybody? Go ahead.
I had spies make oath with Rahab for mutual safety, a convert in Jericho.
Okay. What do you remember what Rahab told the spies about? She gave them some important information that they needed to know.
All the people were afraid of them.
Mm-hmm. And their hearts were melted. Mm-hmm. What about their courage? The
no
people
spirit left within
no
them.
Courage left within them. Mm-hmm. And they'd also had heard about the Red Sea. God's delivery through the Red Sea and the defeating of the Amorite kings. So they had all that information, which melted their hearts. And as Julie said, they helped the spies. She helped the spies escape, and she protected them from being arrested and seized by the authorities. Okay.
Can I just say one thing that I noticed that I hadn't noticed before that I thought was like, wow, is that the men that Joshua sent gave her the red cord. I always thought she had the red cord. And I don't know if I find that.
You're right. It says this in verse 8. You shall tie this scarlet cord in the window. It could be that they found it in her house, but yeah, you're right. It says, that implies that they gave it to her.
So it makes you wonder, doesn't it? I'm just saying, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
Okay, anything else on chapter 2? Okay, moving on to chapter 3.
Mm-hmm. I know it can be
Do we have a theme for chapter 3?
Crossing the Jordan
on dry ground.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, what was the Jordan River at like before they got there?
Flood stage.
Flood stage. Was it easy to cross at flood stage? No. Okay, they did camp 3 days on the other side of the river before they crossed over. They had what? Do you remember what their purpose for that preparation? They were prepping for the cross, and do you remember what they were told to do?
Like ceremonial consecration.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That was one of them. They were to prepare to move. And I think they were
consecrate yourselves.
Yes.
Choosing the 12 men.
That means.
No.
No? Okay.
Joshua said, "Come here and hear. Come and hear the words of the Lord."
Yes.
So it was important for them to hear God's word before they entered into the promised land. Anything else on chapter 3?
The Ark of the Covenant is the reference point for the crossing.
Mm-hmm.
The crossing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the Ark represented
God's presence.
God's presence. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's jump into Joshua 4. And let's start by looking at verses 1 through 3. We're just going to take it little chunks. Julie, would you start?
When all the nation had finished passing over the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua,
"Take 12 men from the people, from each tribe a man,
and command them, saying, 'Take 12 stones from here, out of the midst of the Jordan, from the very place where the priest's feet stood firmly, and bring them over with you, and lay them down in the place where you lodge tonight.'"
Okay, first of all, in verse 1, what has finally happened?
They crossed the Jordan.
They are finally on the other side of the Jordan River. Okay.
In the promised land.
In the promised land. And who is speaking to whom?
The Lord is speaking to Joshua.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And he tells him, verse 2, we see the 12 men that were brought up originally in chapter 3, verse 12 from last week. What does God telling Joshua that these men are going to have to do?
Pulling the stones.
Mm-hmm.
Stones out of the...
Yeah. Yeah. So I would imagine that's probably a difficult task. I wouldn't think these are little stones. They're big stones. And what are they supposed to do with them?
Put them where they're going to lodge.
Take them with them where they're going to lodge. So they're going to have to carry them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so...
I had a question, but maybe I didn't get answered. Because I haven't looked at this yet today. When they took the stones, this is just a nitty-gritty thing. When they took the stones out and place where you lodge tonight, does that, I was wondering if each man put them, you know, mm-hmm. where they were, and then Joshua and whoever put them together.
It doesn't say, does it?
We don't know.
Yeah.
I just thought maybe you guys knew something. Mm-mm. I don't know.
No.
Okay.
Well, Corey referenced last week that the Jordan River had a rocky bottom. And now we see that they're looking for rocks and stones. So I think the bottom of the riverbed was a mix of different typography type stuff. But Dory, I don't know where they laid them other than where they were. We'll talk later.
See, there's a little more.
Where, but
five.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a little thing that I know okay. with the stones. I've been to Israel twice, and they talk about the stones.
Uh-huh.
And they will take you to a place where there are stones. But if you research it, those stones have never been found.
Right.
But here's a picture of what you'll see. Now, you can see, there's other pictures if you Google it or look it up, that they have the stones stacking, like 2, 4, 6. But one of the things that I wanted to share was that the 12-stone monument in Gilgal,
mm-hmm.
where the Israelites picked up in the middle of the Jordan River when crossing to the Promised Land. There is no valid proof the stones have been found. And then I wrote a little on the back that Joshua 4:19, when you read the Bible about the stones taken in the middle of the Jordan and place them on the west side of the bank, they are still there because our great God we serve said so forever. We just don't know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I read something sort of similar that the memorial, the scripture is the memorial.
Yes.
God's record of Joshua setting up that memorial is the memorial for us.
Mm-hmm.
Just it's very similar to what you were saying.
Waters with erosion and those.
Yeah.
Move.
Oh, right. Move. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't know which way.
May have been a flood and knocked them over and sort of sprinkled a little bit by now.
But they were supposedly heavy stones, so mm-hmm. they weren't just little.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and there are actually two memorials that are set up, and one of them was in the river, and my understanding is that it was visible above, so that would imply that the stones were very large, yeah.
And if you go over there, they'll show you these stones and say, these are the stones.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what the Bible says, so.
Okay, let's move on and look at verses 4-7. Who's next? Is it Janice?
I read the
Dory. Okay, Dory.
Then Joshua called the 12 men from the people of Israel, whom he had appointed, a man from each tribe.
And Joshua said to them, pass on before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan, and take up each of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel.
That this might be a sign among you, when your children ask in time to come, what do those stones mean to you?
Then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it passed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall be to the people of Israel a memorial forever.
Okay. Who is talking in these verses to whom?
Joshua
to the 12 men, right? Okay. Let's see. So he's telling him what the Lord wants him to do, and here it includes take a stone upon your shoulder. So in verse 5. So that alludes to pretty big stones. And then verse 6, it talks about it being a sign among you. Who is God looking to for, that's not a good way to say it.
The cornerstone.
Well, the sign, this is going to be a sign for your children. Mm-hmm. So he's looking to the future for those who didn't witness the miracle. So that's kind of interesting, I think.
I think a lot of God's signs or memorials were twofold. One for the here and now, for the people who have witnessed it, who went through it, but also pointing to the future. Because remember is such a significant word and concept in particularly the Old Testament.
Because he knows we forget something.
Right. And I know I talked in previous studies that I find those concrete physical signs and memorials like so comforting, because I want to trust God, but to actually see those things, those standing stones, mm-hmm. are really helpful for me. Not that we see these standing stones, but you know, like the rainbow in the sky that still happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reminder that
on the spiritual side, point to Jesus, because he's our Ebenezer, and that mm-hmm. is the stone of help.
Right.
These are the stones, they all point to Christ.
Right.
And
yeah.
Everything points right. to
right.
Christ.
And definitely the cornerstone, definitely. Yeah. But everyday memorials to me now in my life are, I look back to the things that God has brought me through.
Mm-hmm.
And his faithfulness. Whenever I doubt, you know, if I just remember back when I was not believing or I wasn't convinced and how God worked it out, I see the miracle. And they're little to anybody else, but they were huge. They were life changing to me. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting, one of the commentaries I read about the stones was that we talked about that it was piled high enough to see above normal or low water, but it may have been able to be seen if the water was clear, or if you've all been in a river before, floating or canoeing or rafting, there can be a rock or a pile of rocks and you don't see them, but you can tell how the water is.
Mm-hmm. That's
that
right.
It's there.
Mm-hmm.
So you know. Mm-hmm. That would be, even if the top rock fell off, there would still be
swelling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Disturbance in there.
Yeah.
I could see. The commentator was interesting too. They refer to it being set up at Gilgal because that's also a place of Passover. Mm-hmm. And it's also the place where circumcision was done, so it was a significant spot where the stones would be erected. And so one of the commentators I read mentioned.
Mm-hmm. And we will talk about that more next week.
Okay, sorry.
No. It's. No.
So another reason for memorials would also be. It demonstrates that God's what God doesn't diminish over time. So what was important then is still important. Whether we witnessed it or not, there's a memorial, there's a record of it. And this is a memorial record.
Right.
And think of how many Bibles there are these days. Wow. So... So obviously God didn't want this event forgotten. He wanted a record of it. And it says memorial forever. Mm-hmm. Okay. So moving on to verses 8 and 9.
And the people of Israel did just as Joshua commanded and took up 12 stones out of the midst of the Jordan according to the number of the tribes of the people of Israel, just as the Lord told Joshua. And they carried them over with them to the place where they lodged and laid them down there. And Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant had stood. And they are there to this day.
Okay, we'll stop right there. Let's just tackle these two verses. We show action being taken by the 12 men to get the stones out of the river and carry them. And then as they leave, we see Joshua going in and setting up another memorial. And it says here, and it is there till this day. One commentary, I was trying to find evidence of, and couldn't, you know, I don't know if I just wasn't asking the right questions. I don't know. Anyway, but it does say that, it says here, and they are there till this day. Well, at least when the book of Joshua was written.
Right. That's what I think. Wondering.
Yeah, I think that's common understanding that that theologians and commentary writers all say it's believed that that was written. Whoever wrote the book of Joshua was saying that today, mm-hmm. when I'm living, as we've already said mm-hmm. several times, in many respects, they are still standing there today, even if it's not literally the way they were placed. They're still there.
Mm-hmm. The rock.
Because the scripture tells us.
Mm-hmm. The rocks. Yeah. Was someone getting ready to say something?
I was just going to say that's why I love biblical archaeology, mm-hmm. because things will be dug up and then it's
pretty. Mm-hmm. So I did, verse 8 kind of triggered this where they lodged and laid them down there. Mm-hmm. I found a note of an according or an accounting by Josephus. Mm-hmm. And it said, their lodging place that night was 54 furlongs from the Jordan, which was about 6 miles. So they carried these stones on their shoulders for 6 miles and laid them down there, which afterwards were put in order by Joshua, or at least by his direction. We don't know how it happened. We don't know if they put them all down in one location, or if they were wherever they were. You know, we look at 2.5 million people crossing this river. They weren't all in a bunch, I wouldn't think. I would think they would spread out. So each man from each tribe picked one up similar to where he had crossed over. So we have,
you know.
Can
you imagine carrying that 6 miles?
Mm-mm.
But they had to do it on their shoulder, I guess.
Yeah.
Still.
But can you imagine the kind of shape these men are in anyways?
I wonder if they knew ahead of time.
And the women.
And everybody, yes, yeah.
I think that was always the head of the tribe, so not necessarily. That's my understanding anyway. They had God with them.
That's right.
I mean,
I was going to say. That's what I thought about the priest, too. I have to stand there all that time holding the ark and carrying it all of that distance.
Right,
too.
Right.
I thought about them. Cross. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was like, they're carrying that big ark.
Right.
All the way to the waters, in the waters, stood there while 2 million people crossed. Their poor arms were probably...
I think they changed priests because it didn't give specific ones.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So there were Levitical priests.
Right.
And then there were priests.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know how many Levitical priests there were. They might have worked in shifts. I don't know.
Right.
Or it could have been the same four, and God just fortified them
all the whole time.
Yes.
All the priests were Levites.
Yeah.
But not all of them were from Aaron.
But not all Levites were priests.
Right. There we go.
But only the ones from Aaron could be the ones carrying the ark. Is that my understanding?
Think about that a second.
It was the core
that not to carry it. They had to work in the temple, but to carry it was one of these other ones.
It started with a K.
Yeah, so the core. So there were Merarites, Gershonites, and
it was the Kohathites that could not do it.
Kohathites that could not.
Kohathites, yes. Yes. And then there were the priests that had directly descended from Aaron. So each one of those groups took care of different parts of the tabernacle.
Right.
Mm-hmm. One was all the supports things, like the first. They were the pegs for the tents and all the support things. And then there were the structures, like all the curtains and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then the last group would have been the furnishings for the tabernacle. Mm-hmm. But the Ark of the Covenant would have been up from the front because that was God's presence leading them, of course. Mm-hmm.
Well, wouldn't it be the priests who were the only ones allowed into that part mm-hmm. of the tabernacle mm-hmm. that would be the ones allowed to
the high
carry?
The priest would be the only one that could go into the Holy of Holies.
So.
Yeah.
So they would be the only ones to carry.
And the Levitical priest, the Levite, the ones directly descended from Aaron would have been the only ones that could have been like priests.
Right.
The others were
assistants.
All of it, but they took care of things
right.
in the tabernacle.
Right. Yeah.
Like the table showbread and altar incense and the lampstand and all that stuff.
Okay. So verse 9, we have Joshua setting up the stone in the Jordan, in the riverbed. And whether we can see it or not while the water is, definitely if you can't see it, but then there's a time of drought or crisis and you can see it, that would be a form of remembrance of God took care of us before, he can take care of us again. Mm-hmm. So we just don't know all those details, but God does.
I do think it's really important to pause and think. I mean, we've heard this kind of thing before, but what they are memorializing is that God has rescued them. He brought them through the Jordan River out of really exile. They were mm-hmm. They've been wandering in the desert, and that was after they had been rescued from Egypt or released from Egypt. But now they've crossed over the Jordan River at flood stage, and not only was the water stopped, but the ground was so dry. I mean, we talked about how heavy all this stuff was. Well, if it wasn't bone dry, mm-hmm. miraculously dry, they would have just sunk in, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think it's really important to pause and think about what, in that moment, what are they memorializing? God has continued to rescue them, and he's bringing them now into their new promised land, which is based on his promise going to be kind of the opposite of where they've come from. It's a land flowing with milk and honey, and it's going to be land that they get to call their own. And they are going to actually be the nation of Israel in an established area.
I've been thinking it's interesting to me that during World War II, you know, they were, Israel wasn't there anymore. I mean, right. Didn't belong to the Israelites. And in 1946, it was the world, the government leaders, brought the Israelites back in and gave that area back to the Israelites. Is anybody old enough to? Well, I don't remember either because I was just a little girl, but I was around, and but you can read about that, and that's the reason the Palestinians are so angry. But just think about that God gave it to them, and then used men to give it back to them. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's what's been most of my mind.
Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing story, isn't it? Have you ever read the story like the the president at that time,
Truman.
Thank you, Truman, had actually worked. He as a tailor, and he had something to do when that decision was being made at the UN, and going and convincing them to vote for Israel. They had almost lost that. It's a great story. I wish I was better at, you know, telling it, but it's written somewhere.
Well, you inspired me to look it up.
Yeah, and how the deal almost fell through, but it turned out that Truman had worked in a haberdashery with a Jewish man. And that Jewish man went in and convinced Truman to persuade to vote for it becoming the nation. Isn't it? I mean, it's amazing.
Well, we just see God at work, don't we? Yeah.
Yes. So,
okay.
It's a great story if you can find it.
Okay, well,
let's find it at the Truman Library. They have really Palestinian wash, but.
Oh, have they?
I've been kind of in a deep dive at Truman over the last 6 months. Read a couple biographies and been to his house and to the Truman Library. And it's interesting the things that they changed at the library that are not really historical to the records.
Yeah.
So, interesting.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that story for a long time, so now I'm like, oh yeah, I need to go back and revisit that because it was a miracle, really.
Okay, let's move on to verses 10 through 14. We kind of see a summary of the crossing. Where did we leave off? Lisa? 10.
You took the crosses, I'm sorry. For the priests bearing the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord commanded Joshua to tell the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. The people passed over in haste.
And when all the people had finished passing over, the ark of the Lord and the priests passed over before the people.
The sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh passed over armed before the people of Israel, as Moses had told them.
About 40,000 ready for war passed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho.
On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they stood in awe of him, just as they had stood in awe of Moses all the days of his life. Okay, so in verse 10, we see the priests are still standing where they were told to stand. And it says here, They stood there for how long?
Until all the head passed.
And then the ark was a visible for all the people in the passing. And verse 10, it says, the people passed over in haste. Any thoughts on that?
I wondered, you know, why, unless it's because there were so many of them. It was this interesting statement.
I wondered if they were afraid the water would come.
Well, that's what I mean, if you imagine this giant wall of water.
Kind of funny, even if you just, like, you know, it's odd, you know, that this, mm-hmm. you know, we have faith. But there's this wall of water right here.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's threatening us.
Well, it was a ways up, wasn't it?
But I mean, still, like, you know, you'd be like, this is so weird.
Yeah.
And that it would just kind of give you that eerie feeling, like, when is this going to change? And maybe I need to hurry up. That's what I thought.
It could also be that the taking 2.5 million across a riverbed. That's going to take a lot of time.
Yes. Right.
The people holding the Ark of the Covenant have to stand there.
Right.
The whole time.
That's what I was.
So it could be also to, you know, lighten their load.
Mm-hmm.
They got to stand here forever.
Mm-hmm. We want to get across so we can set up camp tonight and make supper. I don't know.
Could they be excited, maybe?
Yes.
Because they've been waiting for 400 years.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. All of them.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I was intrigued by the last phrase of verse 10, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. And what Matthew Henry says is that it's just understood that Moses had instructed Joshua to do what God told him. So I'm thinking, like, they kind of, to Amy's point, Moses had prepared the people. Moses prepared Joshua, and Joshua prepared the people. And it's like, okay, it's go time. Let's You know what? We've been preparing for this. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really happening. Let's get going. And, you know, all the other things that you've said. But, mm-hmm. yeah, because I thought that was just kind of a random phrase.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's just to say they prepared for this for quite a while.
Yeah.
It was interesting to me that the Lord saw fit to put that little.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know.
Did we talk about the, what's verse 19?
So not yet.
But also,
I think that gives an answer also as to why they went in haste.
Well, true. But I was going to say obedience.
Yes.
I think that
God's saying, get over there. You got to get
God's
over there
telling
by this day because.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right. Yeah. I think all those things kind of point to obedience. I mean, yeah.
Well, they had to do it that day, obviously, because they didn't want to be there.
Yeah, and yeah.
That's a big problem. That's a lot of people, livestock, everything.
Right, so you got to.
That's right.
Got to move.
So what about the tribes that crossed over, the ones that are mentioned, Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh? Why only a half tribe?
Yeah.
Does anybody?
Because it's split with Benjamin.
Well. Is it Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh? Aren't they staying on the east side of the Jordan? And then, but the army, the men, have to go over to.
Right. What about the other half of the Manasseh tribe?
Joseph gets two tribes out of him, Manasseh and Ephraim.
Yeah. Well, there's if you look on a map.
So Manasseh got half.
Right.
Well, if you look on a map, you can see Manasseh on the east and one on the west. So
yes,
that tribe divided.
Okay.
And
my understanding was, at least the little bit of research I did previously, that it was half of Manasseh given land on the east side because that's kind of the land that they had was too large for just Reuben and Gad to possess. So a portion of Manasseh was given that, the rest of the land to kind of fill it out.
So if you look on map 161, you can see that there's two sections of land on either side that are marked by Manasseh. But so with those men who walked over They left their families, their livestock, and everything else. And how many does it say passed over ready for battle?
40,000. Which again is obedience. Because mm-hmm. they are fulfilling their promise. Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to do a little comparison to kind of give you an idea how much 40,000 was. The newly renovated David Booth Kansas Memorial Stadium can hold 41,525 fans.
That's a lot of people.
So that just kind of gives you an idea. How many men ready for battle? Just from those 2.5
about
tribes.
About 40,000. Mm-hmm. So it could have been 41,000.
Never know. Anyway, okay, so as we move on to verse 14, what do we see God doing in verse 14?
Exalting Joshua, as you said it would be.
I was going to say, again, it's fulfillment of a promise.
Mm-hmm. And all of Israel stood in awe. And what, did anybody look up what awe means?
Mm-hmm. Reverence.
Reverence.
Respect.
Okay, I'm sorry, I'm going back a little bit because something went off in my head. I looked it up. This might help. God, the haste part, is it ties also with when they left Egypt?
Right.
So this fulfilled the prophecy of swift deliverance because it demonstrated the sovereignty of Egypt at the time. But it was also symbolic for them because it allowed the practice of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, which requires eating without time for the dough to rise. Mm-hmm. So that was
in haste.
That was the haste mm-hmm. part yeah. of the symbolic meaning.
Which ties into what Dory was mm-hmm. getting at also.
We're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about it more next week.
Yes, yes.
So who exalted Joshua in leadership in front of the eyes of the people?
The Lord.
The Lord. So we see the Lord. He's the only one who can exalt his leaders. Mm-hmm. People can try their hardest to get to that position, but they're not going to succeed unless God is.
It also points to the people, can you imagine, like, realizing that God now has empowered a new leader mm-hmm. that's just as powerful now because of God. Mm-hmm. It's God in the person, mm-hmm. not just the person.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but if we look at that person of Joshua, mm-hmm. he was an obedient servant,
and
he had been for
Moses for all
most
years.
Of his life,
mm-hmm.
And he kept his word, and he knew who God is. He was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And that's why the Lord picked him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we had seen previously, not in Joshua, but in Numbers, and mm-hmm. the people challenging Moses' authority, and God having to show them a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So it was good for God to show them. Tangibly, that Joshua is the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one I've chosen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on. Verses 15 through 18. Is it mine?
I think you read the last one.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Okay, go ahead.
And the Lord said to Joshua,
command the priests bearing the Ark of the Testimony to come up out of the Jordan.
So Joshua commanded the priests, come up out of the Jordan.
And when the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came up from the midst of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet were lifted up on dry ground, the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before.
Okay, so verses 15 and 16, who's speaking to who? Mm-hmm. And then 17 is 18, Joshua commands the priests. So throughout this chapter, we see God speaking to Moses, to Joshua, and then Joshua,
mm-hmm.
It's consistent. It doesn't say that Joshua did any of this on his own. It was God told him, and so So finally, the priests get to walk out of the river. And as soon as their feet got on dry ground, the flood of the water came flooding back. We don't know how long they had to stand in the river, but they stood there as long as it took. Mm-hmm. And it was a great privilege and a great responsibility for them to serve the Lord in this way. So I can't imagine there was any grumbling. I don't know. But anyway. And I was kind of curious as to how long they would stand there. And I did some try to find out length of time and all this. So anywhere between 8 to 24 hours. So I don't know. It depends on how far out they were or if they were bunched up. And that's just other people's thoughts.
Well, 2 million people with stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't have mechanical. It's not like we had cars, you know, like mm-hmm. that we could just scurry across. I mean, they've got to.
With cars.
Mm-hmm.
Walk much in public.
Carts. Walk across. I'm sure they had carts.
So we have to remember, too, yeah, he's leading the parade. It's the mm-hmm. Lord. He would accomplish whatever he had.
Yes, yeah. But I'm just saying, I can't imagine that it was. It's not comparable to today's standards, I guess, is what I'm.
I was thinking probably during daylight hours, at least. Mm-hmm.
That's what. Yes, right. Yes. Yes.
Okay, so there's no turning back now.
No.
That
water closed the door.
River bridge to the other side had been eliminated. So the work starts and the fun begins, kind of. So let's look at verses 19 through 24.
The people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they encamped at Gilgal on the east border of Jericho.
And those 12 stones which they had took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up at Gilgal.
And he said to the people of Israel, when your children ask their fathers in times to come, what do these stones mean?
Then you shall let your children know, Israel passed over this Jordan on dry ground.
For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until you passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up for us until we passed over.
So that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, and you may fear the Lord your God forever.
Okay, so verse 9 talks about the 10th, 19, I mean verse 19, talks about the 10th day of the first month. I'm sure we have some ladies with some information on that, if anybody would like to share. Story.
Well, let me see what I wrote.
Nothing like putting you on the spot. But
the first day of the 10th day of the first month, it's the month of Nisan, 4 days before Passover, and the very day when the Paschal Lamb required to be set apart. The providence of God having arranged that the entrance into the Promised Land should be at the Feast of Passover, exactly 40 days minus 4 days, in the wilderness, Passover. Oh yeah, they left Egypt and passed over into a new land.
It's like the same exact time.
Mm-hmm. Is that surprising to anybody? No. God in control mm-hmm. of time and space and everything.
And another reminder that God is the one who's doing the rescuing. And it's pointing, as Lisa said, to Christ.
Mm-hmm. But Ralph Davis puts it this way. Therefore, we might say this day it marked the beginning of redemption. Now it marked its completion. And what Yahweh began, he brought to completion. Yahweh has written his faithfulness across another date on our calendars. Israel had been a slave, and now Israel was an heir.
Thank you.
So the rest of the chapters, etc.
So as we talk about memorial records and stuff, Exodus 12 has information regarding what Dory just talked about. So Exodus 12, 1 through 3 is them prepping for the Passover, selecting the lamb. Tell the community on the 10th day of this month, each man will do this. And then also in Exodus 12, verses 40 and 41, I just found this interesting, is now the length of time the Israelite people lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of the 430 years, to the very day, all of Lord's divisions left Egypt. So here we just see him being in control of everything. Everything. And the control, the timing of the crossing of both, you know. So I put this on the board, and I know we all know it, but I thought it would be nice just to kind of see it in form. So comparing the two crossings, you can find this information in Exodus 12. No, Exodus, where do I have it? Exodus 14. And this, of course, we've just been reading the last 2 weeks. So the reasons for leaving Egypt was to escape. The reason for crossing the Jordan River was to conquer. The method, strong wind parted the water. The flow was cut off and the water was heat. Enemies were behind them in Egypt and ahead of them in the Promised Land. Who did they follow? Coming out of across the Red Sea, they followed the cloud, which was the representation of the Lord and Moses, and then the ark, which was a representation of the Lord and Joshua. Notice, they didn't have any notice. They had zero notice leaving. Mm-hmm. They had 3 days of preparation before crossing the Jordan. Conclusion, they're similar but different. No magic formula. God works in his own way. So here, out of bondage with the miracle, and into the Promised Land with another miracle. So anyways, that's helpful for me. I'm a visual person. Mm-hmm. And so I was hoping it would be helpful to somebody. And let's see here. So it mentions here verses 23, for the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan for you until you passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up for us until we passed over. And verse 24, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that the hand of the Lord is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. So looking at verse 24, let's expand. Let's talk about verse 24. Did we see evidence of some of this in the chapters leading up to here? About the mighty hand of the Lord and the enemies seeing. Didn't Rahab kind of report that they saw the mighty hand? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had the Israelites had defeated 2 Amorite kings, and word got out about that. Mm-hmm. And even non-believers believe that, credited the God of Israel, the Israelites' God, mm-hmm. as being powerful.
Mm-hmm. We've mentioned several times that God controlled all this. Mm-hmm. And I just want to ask, who's in control today?
Right.
I think we need to keep that in mind.
Well, and that's, I was going to say, I think verse 24 is really our takeaway, that mm-hmm. even as God was, or as the hand of the Lord is mighty mm-hmm. in Joshua's day,
he still is.
Yeah, yeah, the hand of the Lord is mighty, and we're to reverently fear him.
And let him lead. To me, that's what I see, is how He led them each step of the way, and he does that in our life if we're tuned in.
Mm-hmm. He still does it. We may not realize that he's doing it, but mm-hmm. he's still doing it.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can kind of, as you go through something, whether it's right or wrong, if you just feel that, or things open up when you don't expect it to, and always according to his word, for sure, like for his good and for lifting him up,
His glory.
Not people, but him, God. And sometimes in your own life, you see miracles. I think you do. I do. And I'm praying for that.
Sometimes it's such a thrilling time mm-hmm. to stand and hold the ark and get to do something like this, but also the same amount of obedience is required, even if it's I got through the day, I got through the airport.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Even if it was, I had a conversation with my son who I haven't talked to in 6 years, even if it's these little things, that same obedience is required. If you're Joshua, who has a big job to do, or if you're Corey, who has diapers to change.
That's right. Or, it's just as thrilling, whether it's little or it's
well, bigger. Even if it's not thrilling, even if
well,
it's
well, I think it's thrilling when you go on to uh-huh. when you sense the presence of God working in your life. It's thrilling to me, and it's empowering to me. Not that it makes me feel more powerful. It makes me feel more secure to know.
Yes.
That God, He works in your life. Little me, who am I, Mm-hmm. And you're right, it doesn't matter how small it is. Even if it's just helping another person and knowing that it's pleasing to God, Mm-hmm. There are lots of little miracles that happen all the time in your life, I think.
Oh, for sure. Well, I think, though, to Barbara and Corey's point, we don't always feel the victory is how I'll put it.
Oh,
but we know, we know because his word tells us.
Right.
He's still at work and he's still guiding us. He still goes before and behind and on either side.
And I agree with you. And that's called faith.
Right. Well, and I think that's why memorials and signs are so important, because God knows our understanding is finite. Our memories are, my memory is really bad. And so he is so gracious and kind to continue to remind us and assure us and give us those little, little and big victories.
And that's the one thing and the reason I said that was because sometimes we just do the next thing and we don't think about the fact that God is guiding us. And I just think we need to have that in our minds that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely. Because you might be going through something that it's just like with your children. When you're praying for your children, and it's years and years, and but sometimes you have the idea how it's going to come out, and you're not looking for how the Lord's working while you're going through it. And
well, you may not see it, too.
Or you may not see it. Sometimes but you, by faith, you stand on the promises, and he gives you little indications along the way that he's with you. That's what I'm talking about.
Yes, I get that.
Yeah.
So sometimes
I'm not sure that I came across in the right way with what I was trying to express, but I think that's just the way you walk with the Lord according to his word. And it has to go according to his word. And it's not us. And he does it for everybody, not just me. Everyone that belongs to him. That's what's amazing. No matter, all over the world, there are people, his children are all over the world. It's pretty amazing, really. It is amazing.
It is amazing, Ellen, that's true.
So kind of on the other side of the coin, maybe, in this space and time, the people are under the Mosaic Covenant, and you're building your covenants as you're leading to the more clarity as it's pointing to Christ, the ultimate fulfillment. These people are under the Mosaic administration at this time. So they have the Ten Commandments, and so they're pointing to God is pointing to, in a way, the holiness of His Word, and these people, kind of as a representation of the church, because they're pointing to the Promised Land. Here are my commands. I want you to walk in my ways. This is my covenant within the Mosaic covenant that is written. You're to read it and obey it. But then in doing so, as a people or as a church, you're light into the world in which you're going. So if you do all these things, then you enter Canaan, you're entering this Promised Land. You as a people or the church, because Israel is the church and the church is Israel. And it's a picture of what we're meant to be as a people of God, and that we are obedient and we want to be holy. And that the Word tells us, be holy as I am holy. Mm-hmm. And in order for us to strive and become holy, we're obedient to His Word. And in this point in time, that's what some of this is all about.
Very good. Well, to sum it up, we all have a Jordan River that we have to cross. Whether it's big, little, mundane, giant. But Greece took a step of faith. The waters didn't divide and stop until they put their toe in the water. So we have to make sure we step out in faith and put our toe in that water and watch and expectantly wait to see what God will do. That's my takeaway. I think this is I'm glad we have this as a memorial record for us to read. Anyway, any closing thoughts or from anybody?
Well, quote from one of the commentaries that I read, a fearless Christian is not self-made or self-grown. And I think that's pretty much what you're saying too, that we are to step out in faith. We're to be obedient, mm-hmm. With courage that the Lord gives us, to recognize that that's where. So I'm very guilty of not feeling courageous. But this, I feel like this study is really helping me remember and learn that it's not me being courageous. It's me depending, being obedient and being dependent on the Lord. And that makes me courageous, or will.
He says be strong and courageous.
And he says that. And yeah, right. Right. Yep.
Okay. Well, let's close in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we are so grateful for this opportunity to gather together to share with what we have learned and gleaned from Your Word. We thank You for guiding our discussion, and we pray for guidance as we go out from here. Give us the courage and the faith to approach our Jordan Rivers, to act upon Your leading and Your directing. And help us to listen to You throughout our days as we interact with loved ones and neighbors and strangers. Help us to reflect Your love in our lives. For we pray in Your precious name. Amen.